Hey, are you listening?
When you find yourself in danger, when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking, there is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call
OTR Rob.
Ladies and gentlemen, as responsible parents, you never think of allowing your children to play with poison. And as responsible Americans, it's your duty to protect them from the dangers of the poison we call prejudice. Here in America, racial and religious hatred does exist, sustained by the political adventurers and plain crackpots who are willing to scrap the democratic way of life to attain their own ends. Prejudice in America is centered in their addled philosophy. But unless we guard ourselves and our families, it can find its way into our own lives. Then the poison would do its work, undermining America's unity, sabotaging our prestige abroad, and wrecking our ideal of individual freedom. In your family life, you can effectively carry on a campaign against prejudice. Our youngsters grow up with a pride in their country. Teach them that part of that pride is our tradition of accepting or rejecting people on their individual worth, not on the basis of race or religion or color. Remember, freedom and prejudice can't exist side by side. If you choose freedom, fight prejudice.
Hello, nurse.
Boys, no control.
Hi, babe.
Hello, nurse.
Hey, everyone. This is OTR Rob welcoming you to another edition of The Adventures of Mike Shane, or Michael Shane. He would be Mike Shane in the books, but Michael Shane over the air. Anyway, I love the interplay between Wally Mayer and Kathy Lewis. I really think it's written very well, and I'm not all that certain that this wasn't a daytime program as opposed to an evening program. I could be wrong about that, although I think some of the sponsors that sponsored these shows reflect what listeners they were trying to go for. And the interplay between Kathy Lewis and Wally Mayer, I think, is just wonderful to listen to, and very cute and very funny. And so Michael Shane has grown on me since I started presenting these episodes. I only hope there's going to be enough for a while to last for the fall season. I'm hoping so. The only other version of Michael Shane was one that was done in the late 40s and starred the actor who played Philip Boynton on Our Miss Brooks, Jeff Chandler. And those were pretty hard-bitten short stories and sent Michael Shane back to his roots, which was New Orleans, Louisiana, or Narlands, as the locals say it. Anyway, I really like the Michael Shane Show, and I hope you do too. And enjoy all the other episodes along with this. And I'll see you all back here next week. Stay safe. Be careful.
The Adventures of Michael Shane, Private Detective. The people who make 76 gasoline and Tyson motor oil, Union Oil Company, present The Adventures of Michael Shane, Private Detective, starring Wally Mayer and Kathy Lewis. San Francisco is a city of color and activity, and in the course of time, Mike Shane's office has had its share of both. At the moment, Mike and his assistant Phyllis Knight have almost more color than they can take. Seated between their two desks is a young man with curly red hair, a red tie, orange shirt, and green coat. Mike squints at him thoughtfully.
But I don't understand, Mr. Cullen Ward. Why would anyone want to kill Mr. What's his name?
Demetro Sador.
Yes, But why? Has he got any enemies?
Mr. Shane, a great piano virtuoso like Demetro Sador has many jealous rivals. Hmm? And then his awful temper, there's no telling.
Why did he start getting these threatening letters, Mr. Collinwood?
Last week. We went to the police at once. They investigated, or tried to.
Hmm?
But Demetro wouldn't help in the least.
Hmm?
He was very annoyed. Then this afternoon, your friend the inspector told me, if we still wanted to look into it, I might come to you.
You are his secretary?
No, minor. I'm just a friend. I live in the next apartment to Demetro. I'm a poet.
Huh?
Perhaps Miss Knight has seen some of my work? My sonnets to a porcelain cupid?
Huh? Oh, yes. Well, yes.
Mr. Cullen Ward, you want me to investigate these threats against your friend, but I doubt I can do anything unless he's willing to help.
But we can't let a great pianist, a great genius, gamble with his life. If you'd come out with me and talk to him, well, he'd be furious, of course. But you might convince him.
You know, I'd like to meet him, Mike. They say he's a character.
Yeah? All right, sir. All right, we'll go talk to your lion of the keyboard.
When? Today?
Today, this afternoon, right now.
I don't believe he hears us.
Oh, yes, it's always this way. I'll just keep pounding. Demetro! Demetro!
Don't the neighbors complain of this racket?
Oh, no, there are only five of us in this building. We all love Demetro, and we used to know it.
I should think. Living over a garage in a poultry market.
He stopped playing.
Demetro! Demetro, it's Eric! Demetro, I want you to...
Go away.
What?
Demetro! Come back! Demetro!
I am practicing.
Demetro, we've got to talk to you. It's important. Go on in, Mr. Shane, quick.
No, I have a concert tomorrow.
You can practice while we talk. This is Mr. Shane and Miss Knight, Demetro Sador.
It's a pleasure to meet you, Mr. Sador.
You are welcome. Mr. Cullen Ward tells us you've had letters threatening your life, sir. We'd like to ask you to...
Police! Police, I will not talk.
Huh?
No!
Where?
No!
Demetro, please. Mr. Shane is a private detective.
We simply want to look at those letters, sir. It's possible.
No letters. Foolishness. Nobody killed Demetro Sador.
Oh, we hope not, Mr. Sador. It would be a tragedy if anything happened to a musical genius like Demetro Sador.
Genius? Yes, that is so.
Why, I've heard you play. It was out of this world. We can't risk losing you, Mr. Sador. San Francisco's greatest pianist.
America's greatest.
Yes, America's greatest. Mm-hmm. That's why we must find who sent you those threatening letters.
They are nothing. Women fall in love with Demetro Sador. I scorn them. Now they hate. I have no time for them. I am married to my music.
Yes, sure. Now, if you'll just show us the letters, please.
No, all foolishness.
But we have to see them.
No!
Please,
well,
Mr. Sador.
There is the door. Go! No! Go!
Be better, Mr. Shane. I'm sorry.
Okay, you're the boss.
You are the first people to come to my studio today. And you are the last.
Well, how do you feed that guy? Through the bars?
I'm frightfully sorry, Mr. Shane.
Eric, what in the name of three-toed Pete went on in there? I could hear it through the wall.
Oh, it was about those letters again. Mr. Shane, Miss Knight, Rita Amodio.
How do you do?
Oh, those letters. Probably they were mailed by some crank.
That's possible. Well, we'd better be moving along, honey. I'm sorry we couldn't do anything for you people.
Here, hold on. We just can't let you walk off with just a thank you. Let me take you both to dinner.
Well, that's very nice of you. What do you say, Mike?
Well, it's okay with me.
Oh, fine. We'll go to the little Russian restaurant on the hill, the Cossack Club.
Huh?
And I'll read you some of my poetry, Miss Knight.
Oh.
I know you'll get a kick out of it.
Uh-huh. Right on the shins.
I couldn't eat an
another thing.
But please, you must have some dessert.
No, thanks. No, we really have to be going.
Yes, we have tickets to the theater or something.
Oh, just one more poem. Just one more. My ode to a lonely seagull. Listen. What meanest thou, bird of sad lament?
My, what, Bill?
Oh, Inspector, hey. Well, what are you doing here?
They told me I'd find you here. I understand you talked to that piano player this afternoon.
Yes, about an hour and a half ago.
Uh-huh. Mind going back to his studio with me?
Well, it's useless, Inspector. He won't talk to you, me, or anybody.
I know he won't. He's dead.
This is the floor, Inspector. Uh-huh. It's at the end of the hall, Studio A.
Oh, I can't believe it. Our own Demetro dead. Murdered, you say?
I don't know. Some woman phoned me all in a lather. Said it was murder. She told me about you, Mike, and where you were eating, so I thought I'd better bring you along.
Here we are, Inspector.
Well, police surgeon beat me here. What do you say, Doc?
Oh, Inspector. Haven't had time for real examination yet. There's something weird about this.
Oh, there's the body. By his old piano.
Who's the man with the beard?
Dr. Klassen, you found the body.
Huh? Oh, yes, I did.
All right, what's the story?
Well, you see, I lived the other end of the hall, Studio D. I got a phone call, it was Dimitro. Uh-huh. He said something was wrong with him, gasped, and then I heard him fall.
What time was this, Doctor?
About an hour ago, 6:10. Mm-hmm. Well, I found his door locked, so I got Professor Gebhardt across the hall and broke the door down. I found him here by the piano. The phone had fallen from his hand.
No signs of violence, no wounds on the body.
Maybe it was his heart.
Heart? No, he was in perfect health.
What do you say, Dr. Collins?
Just a minute. A little pressure under the ribs here.
You aren't giving him artificial respiration.
No, dead too long. I want to... Yes, that's it.
What is?
He died of asphyxiation.
Asphyxiation? Are there any gas jets in this studio?
It's not that kind of gas, Inspector. I know the smell. It was poison gas. It was deliberate murder.
We'll return to Michael Shane and his adventures in just a moment. Friends, did you ever stop to think that you may be driving a car with a sticky engine? Well, that's just what happens when your engine is full of sludge. You see, this engine sludge, formed by some oils, is sticky stuff. It can gum up piston rings, plug oil lines, and otherwise interfere with smooth, efficient performance. In addition, sludge is often abrasive, full of harsh metal particles that score the inside of your engine. Now, draining your oil will not remove sludge. That's why Union Oil Company recommends flushing out your engine from time to time with Cleanse Oil, the special solvent action cleansing oil. Cleanse Oil is harmless to your motor, but its dissolving action penetrates to every working part, cutting sludge out swiftly and cleanly. Then, when the Cleanse Oil is drained out, the sludge flushes out with it, leaving your engine clean. And with a fresh supply of pure, paraffin-based Triton motor oil, you're all set for hundreds of miles of clean, safe engine operation. To clean your engine out this quick, easy way, just drive in wherever you see the sign of the big orange and blue 76 and ask the Minuteman for Cleanse Oil Service. Thank you. The famous pianist, Demetro Sedor, has been murdered by poison gas, and Mike, Phyllis, and the inspector have just completed a search of the dead man's studio apartment.
Mike, I don't see how it could be murder. The door was locked from the inside, the same with the windows.
Yeah. Demetro Sedor was asphyxiated by poison gas. He did it himself.
Fine, except for one thing. The poison gas must have been in some kind of a container. Well, where is it? We've checked the whole apartment. He didn't have anything stronger than aspirin tablets.
Okay, it was the work of a ghost who oozed through the keyhole, gave the guy chloroform, then trickled out onto the windowsill.
Maybe I can help you, Inspector.
Yes, Dr. Collins.
I just examined the man's throat.
Oh.
There were signs of cauterizing. Death was almost instantaneous. Mm. I'd say the gas was something like Jotite, supposedly a secret German product.
Hmm?
Either liquid or vapor.
Yeah. That's a terrific help.
Mike.
Hmm?
You smell something?
Huh? Smell what?
Well, it's, I'm almost sure it's perfume. A brand I know.
Huh?
Very strong here by the piano in the bookcase.
Say you're right. I don't remember smelling anything when we were in here before. Of course, we weren't paying attention.
Well, it might mean that somebody came in after we left.
But how? Demetrio said we were the first people in the studio today, and that we'd be his last.
And the door was locked from the inside, according to Dr. Klassen. That right, Doctor?
Hmm? Oh, yes, that's right. Professor Gephardt and I had to break in. He lives right across the hall, you know.
Mike, maybe you better double-check that with the professor.
Yeah, we will, Angel. But first, here's something we overlooked.
Letters. Where'd you find them?
On top of that pile of sheet music. Electric light bill. Advertisement. Uh-oh. Here we are.
One of those death notes, Mike?
Yeah. Let's see. Postmark San Francisco, day before yesterday. Demetrio, this is your last warning. This week you die. Here, look it over, Inspector.
Written in green ink, unsigned. Sheet about the size of a woman's stationery.
Eh? Is it? Let me see.
Recognize the handwriting, Doctor?
No.
You, Eric?
I don't think so.
Phil. Phyllis, what are you doing? Dusting the apartment?
Well, it certainly needs it. Dust and grit all over the top of that bookcase.
Here, look at this letter. Would you say it's a woman's handwriting?
It could be. It's small enough. The writing looks sort of crude, doesn't it?
Yeah. Disguised. Maybe written with the left hand.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is beginning to stack up. Perfume in the room, a threatening letter written probably by a woman.
Eric, did Demetrio have any special women friends?
Well, you heard what he said. Maybe some women were in love with him, then it turned to hate. He said he was married to his music. It was true.
But that's not an answer. Among the women, who was closest to him?
Well, perhaps Rita.
Was she in love with him?
Well, was she, Eric? Okay, we'll find out for ourselves. Come on, Inspector.
I'll be glad to answer your questions, gentlemen. Won't you sit down on my hassocks?
On your what?
Hassocks, my pillows.
Oh.
I don't believe in chairs.
Rita, Miss Amorio, after Eric took us to dinner, which was about 5:45 p.m., did you hear anything unusual in the studio next door?
Not a thing. I was sitting here reading. I heard Demetrio playing Grieg's Piano Concerto. That was his favorite piece.
Mm-hmm.
And then, by and by, it sort of trailed off to nothing.
That's probably when he was killed.
But he had no callers. I would have heard them.
You were quite a friend of Demetrio Sedor's, weren't you?
Yes. He was a wonderful man. I can't imagine anyone killing him unless...
Yes?
Well, I was just wondering, could it be possible? Oh, no, it's foolish.
Could what be possible?
Well, it was at a cocktail party last week at the Raynors. I remember something Dr. Klassen said. He was talking of some method he knew to kill a man so there would be no clues.
Go on, we're interested.
Well, that's all I heard. Somebody came over to our group and took me away. Of course, the doctor may have said more.
Mm-hmm, of course. But coming back to the murder itself, Dr. Klassen says Dimitro's door was locked from the inside, that he and Professor Gebhardt had to break in. Do you know if that's right?
Yes, I heard the noise. I went out and watched them.
Phil, would you mind making some notes over at Miss Amodio's desk?
Huh? Oh, of course.
It's a poor sort of desk, really. It's my makeup table.
About Dr. Klassen again. You made a point of talking about him. Have you any reason to suspect him?
Well, the doctor fancies himself a composer.
Uh-huh.
I suppose he did resent it when Demetrio wouldn't play any of his pieces. They were about as musical as the brayings of a lovesick donkey.
Did you ever hear them quarrel?
Oh, constantly. But we all did. That's the spice of our existence. We live in all four dimensions at once.
Mike.
Hmm?
Mike, are these what you wanted?
What did you find?
One bottle of green ink, one bottle of perfume.
What? Why, how dare you? Put those back.
Bill, is it the same perfume we smelled in his studio?
I'm sure of it.
Plus a death note written in green ink. Hmm. Miss Amodio, I'll have to ask you.
You will not. I won't be bullied.
What?
Rita, what's wrong?
Doctor, these pickle-brained snoopers think I killed Demetrio.
What? What about that claptrap? Perfect claptrap.
Maybe. Miss Amodio, just where were you from 5:45 to 7 p.m. tonight?
She was with me. We were having supper in my apartment.
She was there when Demetrio telephoned you?
Yes, she was.
Dr. Yes. Klassen, didn't you tell us your apartment is at the other end of the hall?
I did. Studio D.
Mm-hmm. It's rather remarkable that Miss Amodio could have dinner with you at the same time she was sitting here listening to the piano concerto next door.
Oh, yes. May I talk to you outside, please?
Certainly.
No. This is very embarrassing. I did lie. For a moment, I suspected that Rita might be guilty. Mm-hmm. And you see, she's the woman I love.
Then you didn't have dinner with her?
No.
All right. Now, strain your memory a little more, Doctor. A few days ago, you told some people you knew a way to kill a man so that it could never be traced. We're dying to hear that little secret.
How did you know?
From your dinner date. Little pal, Rita.
Oh? Well, it was just an academic discussion. Oh. Professor Gebhardt and I were talking of various methods of murder, not just one. Mm. Oh, I could name 15 ways of killing a man without a trace. You're not going to accuse me of 15 murders.
A neat answer without telling us anything.
It is as I said.
Okay, that's all for now. But don't leave this building.
Well, I thought you were just about to land your fish, and then you let him off the hook.
Oh, no, we didn't. Let the two of them fry in their own fat a while. Whatever they cook up will be our dish, not theirs.
And while they're cooking it up, Mike, let's take a hard look at the much talk about Professor Gebhardt.
Yes, gentlemen, it was most sad about Dimitro, and such a strange death. Dr. Klassen and I were completely mystified.
We wanted to talk to you, Professor. You stay very much to yourself, don't you?
Yes, I am working on experiment. Yeah. As you see, my apartment is also my laboratory. Hey, I will clear off the chair so you may sit.
Jeepers, did you ever see such a jungle? Stuffed animals, glass, tubing, goosenecks, pots, kettles, doofus machines.
Now you can sit down.
Thank you.
Professor Gebhardt. We'll come right to the point. First, you know if Dimitro Sedor had any visitors tonight between 5:45 and about 6:10?
No, I would have heard them. These walls are like tissue paper.
Uh-huh. And now about Dr. Klassen. Mm-hmm. We understand, Professor, that last week at a party, he told you of some special way of killing a man without leaving a clue.
Yes, I remember.
Do you know what that method was, Professor?
In part, it was some sort of gas.
A gas?
Yes, it was something he learned as a doctor, I suppose.
Do you know what kind of gas?
No. He uses my laboratory and experiments with his ideas, but he does not tell me everything.
Oh. Do you know, Professor, if Rita Amodio was in love with Dimitri?
In love? Well...
In other words, she was?
She is a lovely girl, but she was for Dimitri just a fly buzzing around. Dimitro was very cruel.
Then perhaps she might have killed him.
Rita? No, she could not. She was with me.
With you? But the doctor?
Yes, we had dinner here, the two of us.
Dr. Klassen tried to claim he had dinner with her. Now, don't tell us, Professor, that you're in love with her, too.
Well, I am not ashamed.
Mind if we take a little look around your laboratory?
I would prefer not.
I'm afraid we must, Professor.
If you will tell me what you want, I do not like anyone to handle my apparatus.
What are all these broken glass tubes?
Please, gentlemen!
What's good that? Heavens, what now?
It's Rita.
Come on. What's happened?
Rita, come to Rita. What's happened? Rita,
what is it?
It's Eric. He's dying.
In just a moment, we'll rejoin Mike and Phyllis in their adventures. Ladies and gentlemen, a common error among motorists is to blame excess carbon on the gasoline they use. Actually, nearly all carbon formed in automobile engines comes from the lubricating oil. Now, another interesting fact is that lubricating oils differ widely in the amount of carbon they'll form. In fact, in a recent comparative test made with the 7 leading motor oils sold in the West, Triton motor oil contained 38% fewer carbon-forming elements than the next best oil, 86% less than the average. All of which boils down to the laboratory fact that you'll get maximum protection from carbon if you use Triton motor oil. The secret of Triton's superiority lies in Union Oil Company's exclusive propane solvent refining process, a process so valuable that it's been patented by Union Oil Company. So, friends, with mechanics as scarce as they are today, why not take advantage of the extra protection Triton Motor Oil will give you against carbon?
Triton is a 100% pure paraffin-based lubricant. You can buy Triton motor oil at all Union Oil Minuteman stations. Just look for the sign of the big orange and blue 76. Thank you. Mike, Phyllis, and the inspector are no nearer a solution of the murder of Dimitro. Rita's scream brought them to the hallway where they are trying to revive a very pale and limp young man, Eric Cullenwald.
Eric, what happened to him?
He's dying.
Don't crowd him, folks. Give him air.
Please. I'm all right. All right.
Yes, you are. You're white as death. Can hardly stand up.
He staggered into my room and fell down. I knew he was dying. Just like Dimitro.
Come on, son. Come on. What happened to you?
I don't know. Suddenly, I couldn't breathe. I strangled.
See, it's just like Dimitro.
Where did this happen?
And I was just walking down the hall.
You'd better lie down. Dr. Klassen can take care of you.
No, I'm all right. Quite all right. I'll just sit down in here with Rita.
Mike, this was just like Dimitro. There must be something deadly in this building.
Phyllis, Inspector.
What is it, Mike?
Follow me. We've got to act fast. We've got to get back into that laboratory.
Jeepers, if the professor walks in here on us...
Now, listen. Just before Rita screamed, I asked the professor about some broken glass tubes and bottles.
Yeah, Mike. Here they are on this bench. They look almost like electric light globes.
Phil, back in Dimitro's studio, you said something about a lot of dust and grit.
Yeah, on the bookcase.
Was it like the grit on this bench here?
Yes, it was.
That's not grit, Angel. It's powdered glass.
Yeah. Huh? Does it mean something to you, Mike?
I don't know yet. But there might be some connection. Hey, wait a minute. Honey, that cabinet you're leaning on, is it a phonograph?
Yes.
Has it got a record on it?
Wait a minute. It's Grieg's Piano Concerto.
I'll bet that's it. All right, kids, we're going to make an experiment. Honey, start that phonograph.
Ridiculous.
All right, quiet, please. Is everybody here now? Rita, Eric, Dr.
Yes,
Klassen,
yes.
Professor Gebhardt?
Okay. Now, you probably wonder why we ask all of you into Dimitro's studio.
Yes.
During the course of our investigation, you've all come under suspicion for one reason or another. Now that we know who the murderer is...
What? You know?
We think the innocent parties are entitled to a little explanation.
You know the murderer?
We do.
Dr. Klassen. You claim to know 15 ways to commit a successful murder. One of them, I believe, is poison gas. Am I right?
Well, yes.
In fact, a few days ago, Doctor, you concocted such a gas in Professor Gebhardt's laboratory and told about it at a cocktail party.
Yes,
and
but
you,
I...
Professor Gebhardt, in your laboratory, you experimented with very thin glass globes which shatter by musical vibration. Is that correct, Professor?
It was no secret. I demonstrated it to Dimitro several times.
That was very unfortunate, Professor. The combination of experiments by you two gentlemen killed Dimitro Sedor and almost killed Eric.
No, I
have two of the professor's glass globes here in my hand. One I have filled with cigarette smoke, which we will pretend is poison gas. The other one contains water, which we will say is... Rita's perfume.
Now, look here,
Perfume was used to cover up the smell of the poison gas. Now, I'll take these globes and tuck them behind this oil painting above the bookcase here. Like so.
This is fantastic.
Okay, honey. Sit down at the piano and do your stuff.
All right.
Just the part we marked.
There's water running down the wall.
And the cigarette smoke. The globes broke.
Yes, as Dimitro played his favorite piece, the Grieg Concerto, he unwittingly released the gas which killed him.
This is diabolical. But who could have done it? The door was locked from the inside and the window...
We know that Dimitro was playing the Grieg concerto when we first came to see him this evening. No gas had been released then. But when he played the concerto the next time after we left, he died. Now you all get the significance of that? We leave a live pianist in his room. He locks the door. Half a dozen witnesses see the doctor and the professor break down the door.
So no one entered the room after you left. Yes, that is right.
Well, then the poison was placed in the room while you, Mr. Shane, and Miss Knight were in the room.
Correct, Doctor. And I didn't slip those glass globes behind the picture. And I know that Miss Knight didn't.
And that leaves Mr. Eric Cullenwald.
This is insane. Those threatening letters, Dimitro, God, I hired Shane to protect Dimitro's life.
The letters you wrote yourself, Eric. And you hired us to give you an alibi. You made sure we were with you when you planted the poison gas, and that we were eating with you when Dimitro died.
That's the story, isn't it, Eric?
Yes, I guess it is.
There's just one thing we're in the dark about. How did you get a dose of your own poison?
I had some extra globes of the gas. I was trying to get rid of them. One of them dropped and broke. Everything went wrong. Everything.
Yes, Eric. Yes, in murder, everything is wrong. Right from the first chapter. Well, Inspector, I guess the last chapter is yours.
Hey, kids, look at that clock. Do you realize for once we've solved the case and we're on our way home before midnight?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, what's the matter with you kids? You're so quiet.
Oh, I was just thinking. You suppose Eric was in love with Rita, too?
Of course. When Eric thought he was dying, where did he head for?
Rita's apartment.
That was his motive. Rita was in love with Dimitro. Eric figured his only chance with her was to get rid of Dimitro.
His one dumb trick was to use her perfume. That almost put the handcuffs on his lady love.
Mm-hmm. Three men in love with one woman. I wonder, what has she got that I haven't?
Oh. Well, no, that shouldn't worry you, Angel. What have you got that she hasn't? You know the answer.
Oh, Michael.
Tune in again next week at 8 o'clock for another adventure with Michael Shane, Private Detective, starring Wally Mayer and Kathy Lewis, with Joe Forte as the inspector. Tonight's story was written by Richard DeGraff and based on the character created by Brett Halliday. Music was composed and directed by Bernard Katz. This is John Lang saying goodnight for the people who make 76 Gasoline and Triton Motor Oil, Union Oil Company. This is the Mutual Don Lee Broadcasting System.
Ellery Queen's Minute Mysteries. This is Ellery Queen with the case I call the Chinese Stamp Caper. When I was in Hong Kong, a dealer offered me some rare Chinese stamps he claimed he discovered in an old temple. One item on which he offered me an excellent price was a Chinese special delivery stamp of 1913, pasted to a postcard. The postcard also bore a scene of the Pekin Palace. The dealer said he'd let me have this rare find for only $500. I said, whatever the price, my friend, you're either a fraud or a fool. In a moment, I'll explain why. In the case of the Chinese stamp caper, a Chinese special delivery stamp of 1913, and there was one, was over 7 inches long and 2 inches high. Hardly suitable for a postcard. We stamped out a swindler. return again to Ellery Queen's Minute Mysteries.
The Adventures of Ellery Queen. Ellery Queen invites you to match wits with him as he relates another story of a crime he alone unravels. Before revealing the solution, he stops the play, gives you a chance to solve the mystery. Our guest tonight, who will represent you home, armchair detective, is the talented Hollywood character actor, Mr. Charles LaTour. And now, here's Ellery Queen, master detective.
Thank you, Ernest Chappell, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight, we'd like to tell you about a murder that occurred right under our very noses while we calmly enjoyed a ball game. I call it The Adventure of the Foul Tip.
Good evening, Mr. Ames.
Evening.
Say, that was a sharp movie you just made, Mr. Ames. Here, let me open the door for you.
Look who's here.
Sit
down.
Isn't
Mr. Ames
check your hat?
Reckon I'll hold on to it, ma'am.
Ah, Mr. Ames. Welcome to the society club. Shall I call Mr. Vincent?
Oh, Frank, you know I'm looking for my wife.
Irene? Yes, sir. This way, sir. Irene just finished the dance number with her partner. There he is now. Reno.
I'll come right away,
Edward. That fancy Dan with bear grease on his hair, that's my wife's dancing partner?
Yes, Mr. Ames. Marino, Mr. Chicken. Excuse me, Mr. Hollywood chicken. Enchanté.
Me too. Where's my wife, Mr. Marino?
We have just finished the dance. Oh, that Irene. She's not a woman. She's a spirit. It is like dancing with a perfume breeze.
Well, where will I find my wife, Mr. Marino?
In her dressing room. Here, right through this door, Mr. Ames. Mr. Ames, you must see us dance together. It will enchant you.
Thank you. Some other time, fella.
But I go in with you. You shall see us dance.
Make tracks, Mr. Marino.
You send me away?
Yeah, I do.
Lover of horses. Imbecile, amante di cavallo.
Go on, Bernie boy. So what does he say?
So Bernie says, if I didn't know you were Irene's press agent, I'd have swallowed this publicity on hook, line, and sinker. Just the same, he's running it with a two-column head in tomorrow's paper.
No.
How's that, honey?
Remind me to give you a kiss, Bernie.
You remind me to collect it.
Oh.
Well, the great Chick Ames. Well, hiya, Chick. How are you?
Evening, Mr. Bernie. Well, Irene, here's your old chick in person.
You took your sweet time. And what do you mean, sneaking in on me this way?
Well, I didn't sneak in, honey. I just opened the door.
Oh, yeah? Chicken snoops again.
Well, I guess I'll be moseying in and out the bar and get a few drinks, friend. Far be it from a press agent to horn in on husband and wife.
No, Bernie, stick around.
Okay. You're looking mighty pretty, Irene. Thought I'd get to see more of you on this vacation of mine from pictures.
Oh, slice that baloney someplace else. You know why I sent for you, Chick. You gonna say yes or aren't you?
Now, honey, if you're aiming to start up that divorce talk again...
Aiming to start up again? I didn't finish the last time, you lop-eared horse's collar.
But, Irene, girl, you know I got a 5-year movie contract. Says I can't get into no scandal. The kids of America would be disappointed in their old chick Amy.
Divorce is no scandal. Not when a girl hits to a stable offer in a 10-gallon hat.
Oh, now, honey, I'm real sorry you can't get to see more of me. You haven't got that society fella, Mr. Vincent, to open this New York nightclub for you. You could go right back on west with me.
Riding into the sunset on your saddle horn, I suppose. No, thank you. Do I get my divorce or don't I, you great, big, beautiful movie star, you?
Hey, Irene, take it easy.
Mr. Bernie, you stay off my range.
Okay.
Irene, why do you want a divorce, a powerful bear?
Because I'm in love with a man, that's why.
Well, I'm a man. Huh? Who?
None of your rootin' tootin' business.
Kinda heard rumors about that, Irene. Supposed to be a man mighty close to you, ain't he? Don't give it no mind, but now, who is he?
Oh, stop that phony cowboy hero stuff. I know you from way back to the mother, Anne. Tied for life to a saddle. I want a divorce.
Yeah, well, you ain't a-getting it.
Hey, now, look, Chick, how about you sort of ambling off somewhere and cooling down, huh? And Irene,
you
listen.
Keep out of this, Bernie.
Now, look, you dope, you're going to have the riot squad in here, both of
you,
about to...
Now, look here, Chick, I...
Oh, Mr. Vincent, come on in. Well, quick, for the love of Mike.
What's going on in here, Bernie?
Chick, Mr. Vincent, you got to help me break this up. Irene's ready to open fire. She's going to start breaking stuff in a minute.
Yeah, sure, Bernie.
Well, hello, Chick.
Well, I'm delighted to see you in New York.
Huh?
Oh, evening, Mr. Benson. That's what I get. You see, I come east to Queen Victor's to see my own wife.
It's no wonder you didn't ride into Grand Central on a passenger yodeling home on the range.
Irene, now that Chick's in town, I got a terrific plan. We'll get some great publicity.
Oh, go.
You two ought to be seen together, aren't they, Mr. Vincent?
I should say they should, Bernie.
Now, look, here's the angle. We make up a party. There's a hot ball game at the field tomorrow.
We'll all
sit in one field box. We'll take along Marino, because he's Irene's dance partner. We'll get photographers, reporters. We'll make swell Sunday stuff. Right, Mr. Vincent?
Absolutely, Bernie. Chick, what do you say?
I don't know, Mr. Vincent. I'm aggravated.
He's aggravated. I'd like to know what he's got to be aggravated about.
Take Irene aside and talk to her, will you? I'll work on it.
Right. Look, Irene, come on over here.
I don't want to talk to you.
Now, come on. Chick, be a sport. Bernie's right, you know. An afternoon at the ballpark will do you both good.
Well, I don't know. I'm aggravated, Mr. Vincent.
But think of the fresh air, Chick. An outdoor man like you shouldn't be cooped up in some New York hot box. What you need is air and sun, the wind in your face.
Yeah, well, that is a fact, Mr. Vincent.
Then you'll do it?
Well, Mr. Vincent, I will.
Fine, splendid. Bernie, sit there, he'll go.
Oh, that's great, great. Then we'll all meet outside the ticket booth at the field tomorrow afternoon before the game. I'll have the publicity all set up, Chick. And, Irene's changed her mind, too. Haven't you, Irene, baby?
Yeah, I have changed my mind.
Mighty sweet gal.
Whose idea was this anyway? A jam like this? Manuel, here we are over here.
A great fancy jam. Oh, I'm so sorry to be late. Irene, may I kiss your hand? You are exquisite today.
Oh, cut it out, Manuel. Bernie, where's Benny?
Vincent will be here.
Let us through, Rube.
But Bernie, where are all the photographers?
Don't
huh?
worry, handsome. You'll get mugged inside. Here, Chick, I'll go first in the line.
Oh, well, that's right friendly of you, Mr. Bernie, but I reckon Chick Ames can afford a few baseball tickets.
Nothing doing. Let me at that window, Chick.
Bernie, it's a wonder you didn't get reserved seats in advance, making me stand on a line. I don't see you fighting to get to the ticket window first, Manuel.
When two Bulgarians argue over mere money, my beautiful Manuel Merino looks on with scorn.
Yeah. Oh, there's Vincent inside the gate. Hey, Benny!
Hey, Mr. Vincent! Howdy!
Oh, hello there! Here, Bernie, don't buy me tickets.
Huh?
I'm just bored of them. Let these people through the gate, will you please? Here you are, tickets for box 13.
All right, this way, people. Boy, block a scorecard and pencils there.
Yes, sir. I'm in.
Hey, this is the game. Isn't that Ames? Hey, Ames. The cowboy movie star. Hey, Mr. Ames, give me your autograph.
Oh, yeah. Give me your autograph. Make it pretty bad
out
here
in public. Now, folks, be nice now. I'm just seeing a ball game. No autograph.
Did you hear what Mr. Ames said? No autographs. Now, one side. Come on, Marino, stick a leg.
Who wants to get the publicity today? A cowboy or Marino and Irene, huh?
Oh, nuts. Mr. Vincent, which box was it again?
Box 13, Bernie. All right, here this way, Irene.
Box number 13? Hey, that's an unlucky number.
And there, ladies and gentlemen, you have the beginning of our mystery.
When the number 13 crops up, something's bound to happen. And before anything else happens, here's a number by Paul LaValle and his orchestra. Thank you. And now back to our story. It's a little later at the third base field boxes of a jammed ballpark. A typical New York Sunday crowd is watching fielding practice.
Box 14.
Here you are, Mr. Queen.
Thanks, Hutcher.
Yeah. Oh, thank you, Mr. Queen.
Mickey, sit here. Dad.
Well, it was a good idea to come to the ball game today.
Fine,
Inspector,
yeah.
You look younger already.
Yes,
ma'am. Well, Vinny,
yeah.
You still think that punk team of yours is going to win today?
Thanks. Say, I'm the sure, Inspector, with Clobber pitching. I've got four bits says they don't score two earned runs off.
You're on, sucker.
Well, where's the scoreboard? Well, what's the lineup?
Oh, see that still? Well, Bonds, Inspector, you see Mac knock that ball to deep center field. They'll murder those bush leaguers of yours today.
Ah, they all look like Babe Ruth and Frankie.
Come on, smile, chick. I'll put your arm around him, Irene.
Okay.
All right, go anyway. Look at those photographers.
Ellery, if the movie starts, they're going to the next box. That girl, Irene, that's his wife. Oh, there's Mr. Vincent. He's a millionaire society man who opened a nightclub for us.
Oh, who cares? Come on, play ball.
Sure, play ball.
Yeah,
come on, come on.
Ellery, they're the ones we saw outside the ticket booth, remember? They say Irene's been trying to get a divorce, Mr. King, for a year, but he won't give her one. She's in love. Some people say with Mr. Vincent, though one columnist hinted it might be Bernie, a press agent.
Nikki, I'm in love, too, with a ball game this afternoon. Practice is over.
Glad it, they're leaving the field. We missed the practice.
What is this? A ball game or a personal appearance by that He-Man of Hollywood?
Look at those fans fight to get his autograph.
Now, one at a time, please. Mr. Ames, do you want an autograph for these people?
Well, I'll take just six.
Judging from the expression on her face.
Yeah. Honey, they should be playing a ball game together. She's trying to... but what do I care? Play ball!
Beautiful woman, that Irene.
Brother, you ain't exaggerating.
All right, now that's all. Mr. Ames, take 6 for the 7-6. Now stand back, will you? Everybody
please,
back.
Please, get away from Mr. Ames' box, you...
Will
you?
Sorry.
Ellery, take a look at that hombre coming towards box 13.
A cowboy with a guitar.
He's handsome.
Where? For the love... What's baseball coming to, anyway?
Arizona!
Here, Irene, huh?
I reckon I couldn't forget her, chick. Howdy, ma'am.
Hello, Arizona. Long time no see, sir. Come and sit by me, sugar.
Oh, thank you, ma'am. I've been traveling around a chick here. Sort of keep me cheerful, you know. Me and my guitar.
How'd you find my box, Arizona?
Just followed the herd, chick. Knowed you'd be where the autograph mavericks were sick.
Ha ha, you old fan of man. Arizona, shake hands with these folks.
I remember. That's Arizona Yankee. Please, please. Arizona has salary to play the guitar for him when he's feeling low. Well, he does.
Oh, I'm feeling powerful off my feet, Arizona. Sing me one of them sad songs of yours, will you?
Reckon I will.
He's going to sing here.
Oh, that's mighty pretty, Arizona. Yes, sir.
And the wind blows.
Mighty pretty.
Bernie, this is humiliating. I'm not going to sit in this box and be made a fool of. Look, they're going to snap his picture.
Oh, Irene, this is great stuff for the fans.
Now what, Nicky?
It's Dick Ames, Ellery. He fell out of his seat. He's sick or something.
Get back in the middle, will you? Dick, we're going to take some help.
Dick Ames!
We better have a squint at this, baby. One shot,
please. Oh, wait. Oh, wait. Get out of the way.
In a bad way. We've got to send to the clubhouse. Call a doctor, somebody. Baby, turn these people away.
Come on, one side, remember, next side.
All right, take them out.
Easy now. Ellery, do you suppose anything is really wrong?
You mean foul play, Nicky?
Well, considering the setup.
That is a possibility. Nicky, I came here to see a ball game, and by the babe, I'm seeing it.
Come on, you bums, play ball!
Back in the clubhouse.
My God. How's she gone? I've my four bid back. Oh, look at that scoreboard. Strike. Oh, my God.
Yes, he's got a sergeant, but it's only the fifth inning.
Listen to that bum carbury can at the deck.
But, Sergeant, what about Dick Ames?
Check that. See, I struck the ball.
Oh, Lord. See, he was a natural death.
not poison. Doctors just examined and chick was fun. Now watch this guy, Clover. He likes him down the alley.
Murder. Ellie, what did you
conspiracy. Well, well, Sergeant, let's have the details.
Poison through the mouth. The chick didn't eat or drink anything for an hour. And the doctor says it was quick poison, so the inspector figures he took the stuff right here in the field box.
What did I tell you, Clover?
We'll check your accuracy, Sergeant.
Ellie, gee, what on earth?
He's climbing onto his chair.
Your attention, please. See this roll of bills? I'll give $5 for every autograph Chick Ames signed in box 13 there before this game. Five genuine American bucks, gentlemen. Come and get it.
Mike, sure, you gone. Knock
high now. One at a time. Don't crowd. Let's see it. Yes, there's one. Here's your five. Now, let's see that autograph, please. Mm-hmm. Here's your $5. All right, now. There we are.
What's going on here?
Let me see it.
Oh, uh-huh. Hey, listen, Mr. Queen, I'm sorry, but you can't start a riot.
Oh, the usher. Stand by, usher. Anybody else? There should be one other autograph. What are you doing,
son? He's
buying back
Chick's autograph. That's sunstroke, Inspector. Call the wagon.
Oh, shut up, Dealey.
Son, what's the idea?
Dealey says Ames was poisoned by mouth, hadn't eaten or drunk anything recently, and happened right here in Box 13. So it's obvious Ames must have been poisoned by one of the pencils an autograph hound handed into Wrightridge.
Now, what are the pencils?
Yes, sir. Ames is notorious for his habit of sucking the point of a pencil. Lord knows it's been publicized enough. He sucked every pencil offered him before he scrawled his name.
The pencils had a poison tip.
And the killer's one of those five guys who just showed up to sell back the autograph. There, you with a straw case.
No, Sergeant, no. Let those men alone. If any of the five was guilty, you don't suppose he'd be fool enough to show up to you. There were six. The sixth one stayed away.
The missing one's the killer, all right. Usher.
Yes, Dr. Queen?
What did that sixth palooka look like, remember?
Why, yes, sir. It was a kid, a little boy.
A what?
What a deduction, Mr. Queen. A boy.
That's that. Climb back to the clubhouse if you want to question these people, son.
That's not that bad. The secret of Ames' death lies in the hands of that boy. We must find him. Now, Sergeant, here's what I want you to do.
If the small boy who got Chick Ames' autograph in box 13 just before the game will kindly proceed to the clubhouse with the autograph, he will receive a genuine Chick Ames six-shooter, a genuine Chick Ames cowboy suit, and a genuine signed photo of Chick Ames. Attention, please. If the boy who got Chick Ames...
Officer.
Yes, sir, Miss Queen.
Any sign of Sergeant Dealey and that kid yet, officer?
No, sir, Miss Queen.
Officer.
Yes, sir, Miss Queen.
What's the score?
Four to skunk. Favor the home team. Boy, this clubber is hot.
May he fry in his own lard. No sign of Dealey and the boy yet, Dad. Carry on.
Miss Ames, how do I know you didn't slip your husband a poison pencil with your own dainty white hands, huh? You stood in your way. You're in love with another man. Chick wouldn't divorce you.
I didn't poison him. I didn't. All I know is all of a sudden he fell off his seat in the box.
Who's this man you're in love with?
That's none of anybody's business, including the police.
Is it Mr. Vincent here? He opened that nightclub for you, Irene. He's your angel, isn't he?
No, Normie, it's not me.
Inspector, this is all a high-handed, isn't it? I'll high-hand you later, Vincent. Well, then, Irene, is it this loud-mouthed press agent of yours, Bernie?
Hey, now, wait a minute. There's nothing between Irene and me. It's a business.
No, it's not me.
It's Emmanuel Marino, your dance partner.
She's lying her head off, Ellery. It's one of the names she sees constantly. It must be.
Oh, Dan, here's Sergeant Dealey with the boys.
Come on. I want to see this man's ball game, too, you know. There's your criminal, Maestro, 11 years old.
Come here, son. Don't be afraid. What's your name?
Who's afraid? My name's Montgomery, and no crap. Where's the genuine Chick Ames six-shooter, the announcer said? And the cowboy suit? And the signed picture of Chick Ames? I gotta get back to my seat.
We all do, Montgomery, but first let me have the autograph Chick Ames gave you.
Well, I got it right here on my scorecard. But how do I know this ain't the old double cross? Hey, wait! What's the idea of grabbing my pencil?
Relax, Montgomery, I never grab. Is this the pencil you handed Ames to autograph the scorecard with?
So what? Give me what you promised, Chisler.
Now, Montgomery, be nice, Montgomery.
Dad, now let's hit it, pencil.
Very faint. Enough to establish it. Pencil that poisoned Ames, all right. Sonny, where'd you get this?
Let me out of here.
Oh, now, Montgomery, come on. You answer these gentlemen's questions, and they'll let you go right back to a baseball game.
But I don't know nothing, lady. I come down to the game all by myself, and I bought a ticket, and I just got inside the gate. When a man comes over to me and says, listen, kid, you know Chick Ames? So I said, sure, everybody knows Chick Ames from the movies. So he says, well, look, Chick Ames is going to be at the game today in box 13. So you take this scorecard and pencil and get his autograph for me on account of I'm kind of bashful. Then the guy says, I'll meet you right here after the game and give you $5 for the autograph. So I got it, that's all. But I'd rather have the Chick Ames gun and stuff any day. Give me it and let me go.
What did this man look like, Montgomery?
Oh, he was wearing a big coat and a hat pulled down over his face and dark sunglasses or something.
Wouldn't you know? Disguise. Montgomery, how about his voice? Think you'd recognize it?
Well, he kept a handkerchief over his mouth while he was talking to me. And sometimes his voice was low and sometimes squeaky. Sounded awful funny. He must have been sick. Where's my Chick Ames gun and cowboy suit?
Mr. Burney, take this boy's name and address and see that he gets what I promised him.
Sure thing, Mr. Quinn. Hey, Arizona, what are you digging me in the ribs for?
I guess that's sort of old Arizona's job, Mr. Burney. Now that old Chick's gone west for the last round. Come here, boy.
Hey, you a real cowboy? I bet you're a phony. Better take my address. My name's Mike.
Imagine a little boy is an instrument of a murder. Whoever that man was, he's a monster.
Disguise. Face, figure, voice. Killer's gone by now. 100 miles away.
And even if he's still in the park, how are you going to pick out one guy in a crowd of 40,000?
Just a minute. Officer.
Here's Mr. Queen.
What's the score now?
Hey. Tied up, Mr. Queen. 4-4 in the night. Coming up.
Tied up and going for night. Thanks. I've got to talk fast if I expect to see the end of this game.
Talk fast? What do you mean?
Of course, Nicky. Dad, get these people out of here. I'll tell you the name of the person who handed Montgomery that poison pencil to give to Chick Ames. I'll tell you who really murdered Ames. And there, ladies and gentlemen, you have the mystery. Have you figured out an answer to it? Well, suppose you compare your solution with that of our guest for tonight. Nicky, introduce our guest to our home armchair detective.
Ladies and gentlemen, our guest tonight is Mr. Charles Latour, the famous Hollywood character actor. Incidentally, Mr. Latour is really an old friend of us on the Ellery Queen program, because before he went to Hollywood, he was a member of the cast on many an Ellery Queen mystery.
Charlie, it's nice to see you again. How are you?
Fine, Ellery. Couldn't be better.
That's great. You know, Charlie, it seems every time I see a picture, you're in it. Passage to Marseille, Song of Bernadette.
And he's in Harry Eighth now, Ellery.
Yes, I keep me busy, all right. 51 pictures in the last 26 months.
Charlie, I hope you haven't forgotten your old training in solving Ellery Queen mysteries.
Now, look here, Ellery. You solved the cases. I was the murderer, remember?
Okay. Well, let's try this one anyway. Charlie, who do you think gave Montgomery the poison pencil? That is, who really killed Ames?
Well, I really think Arizona did it. On the face, it would look like either the press man would do it or the proprietor not to want to lose their featured star. But I think Arizona was a bit jealous of the Starboy star and he wanted to break in pictures and he stoked all this out by himself. And this was a chance and I think he did it.
Well, thank you, Mr. Latour. We'll give you the solution to tonight's mystery in just a minute.
And while you're trying to figure out your solution, here are Paul LaValle and the orchestra to keep you from concentrating.
Thank you. don't waste time. Now, here's how it works out. The killer of Ames, that is, the one in disguise who handed Montgomery the poison-tipped pencil, told the kid that Chick Ames would be at the ball game and that Ames would be sitting in box 13. Question. How did the killer know that Ames was going to be at the game, which means it was all planned before Ames got there? How did the killer know that Ames was going to sit in box 13?
That is clear. It means the murderer knew where the party would be sitting before they got to the park.
Well, who knew? Hurry.
Ames and Bernie had a friendly argument in front of the ticket windows as to who'd buy the tickets. That means Bernie didn't know in advance where they'd be sitting.
Sure. And Irene even cracked to Bernie that it was a wonder he hadn't got reserved seats in advance. That shows none of them know.
And yet, one of them did know, Sergeant. The one who gave Montgomery the pencil before the Ames party got to the park. The one who was inside the gate with the already purchased tickets when the others arrived. The only person in that park, or in the world, who knew in advance in which box Ames would be sitting.
Vincent. Vincent, to open that nightclub for Irene.
Yes. It was Vincent who arrived early in disguise, bought the tickets for box 13, accosted Montgomery, gave him the poison pencil and scorecard, instructed the boy where he'd find Ames sitting later, then simply discarded the disguise and waited for the rest of the party to show up. Motive? To free Irene so he could marry her. Now, gangway.
Irene!
Where are you running, son?
To see the end of the ball game.
Hi, Marshal! Wait for the cop!
And there, ladies and gentlemen, you have the solution. We wish to thank Mr. Latour for being our guest armchair detective this evening.
And thank you, Ellery Queen, for solving the mystery. And now, while Paul DeVal and the orchestra are hanging around with some unplayed notes staring them in the face, let's listen to some more music. Forces Radio Service. Company, makers of Halo shampoo to glorify your hair, and Colgate tooth powder to get teeth sparkling and super clean, bring you Mr. and Mrs. North, starring Joseph Curtin and Alice Cross. In all respects, Pam and Jerry North's car is an excellent car with only one defect. It always picks the long way home. That's especially the trouble tonight when Pam and Jerry are coming from a weekend in the country and the car seems to have chosen the longest, darkest, and most deserted road.
Pam, I'll have to take 10 minutes shut-eye, darling, before we can go on. I'm getting dangerously sleepy.
Well, let's do it then, Jerry. This is no place to have a smash-up.
Yeah, just lie back in the seat, dear.
Right. Oh, I can just feel myself drifting right off to sleep, can't you? Jerry. That's right. Go to sleep right while I'm talking. For all you know, I might have had something very interesting to say. I didn't, but I might have. Jerry.
What?
Listen.
Somebody's playing a musical instrument. And way out in the country. He's good, too.
Where's it coming from? I don't see any houses. I wonder... Look, there, by the side of the road.
A man playing a clarinet and coming toward us.
He's seen us.
Hey, come with me. Come with me, huh? This way.
Why, what's the matter?
Just behind those trees. Come and see.
What's there?
A tree got in the way of my car.
Oh, an accident. Anybody hurt?
A girl. And the tree killed her. She's dead. Please come and help me.
Right away.
Where's your car?
Over here, behind these trees, see?
Holy... You really smashed up.
The girl's in the seat. Help me, will you?
Jerry, you look and see.
Right. Say, there's no girl in your car, alive or dead.
What? Well, she was here a minute ago.
Are you sure?
Could you kill a girl and not know it?
We better look around for her, hadn't we?
Jerry, our car's starting up.
Hey, stop! Stop!
That was the girl who took the car.
But you said she was dead.
That's right, she was dead.
She isn't now. Stop! Come back! That's our car!
Which way did she go?
Well, that way, didn't you see? Jerry, here's a brand new man.
What? Oh. Who are you? Where'd you pop from?
I've been right here with you all the time.
I didn't see you. Oh, but I guess it's so dark.
Sure. That's why you didn't see him. It's so dark.
Lady, you said the girl drove your car toward New York?
Well, you were right here, too, you said. You must have seen the car go.
Only he didn't, lady. It's so dark.
Let's not argue about it. If she drove toward New York, I know exactly where she's going. Get in.
Get in what?
My car. It's right here. Come on.
I didn't see any other car here.
Of course you didn't. It's so dark.
My car's been here right along. What's the matter with you anyway? Now, all of you, get in and we'll go to town. Here we are. Made it fast, didn't we?
If you ask me, we made it in no time.
Oh, it's too dark here. I'm going inside where it's dark.
What place is this? It's a pretty gloomy-looking house.
This is where the girl came. It's where we all live. So long.
So long? What about our car? And the girl who was dead but isn't.
What dead girl? What are you talking about?
The girl in your car in the wreck. Oh, only she wasn't there, and then she stole our car.
Lady, you're all mixed up.
Sure, it's so dark.
Well... So long.
Me too, so long.
Wait. If you're going inside and you think the girl's in there, we're going in too.
Oh, no, you're not. Murder goes on in that house and you're not allowed.
But the girl's got our car in there.
Nothing doing. It's dark in that house and if you go in, you'll get killed.
So long. He's gone.
I never saw people move so fast. Jerry, we've got to find out what happened to our car.
The only way we can do that is to get into that house.
Jerry, so dark.
You sound like that clarinet player.
This is the darkest cellar I've ever been in.
I don't think it's a cellar, dear. It's a corridor. I can touch both walls at once.
Oh. Do you hear anything?
No. We'll have to get upstairs. Here's the door.
Can you open it?
I can't find the handle. Oh, here it is. Stick right behind me, Pam.
I'm so close behind you, I'm practically in front of you.
Here goes. It's heavy. There.
Oh! Jerry, what is it?
It's a jam session. These men are musicians getting together and playing just for themselves.
There's the man who drove us in. He's playing the trumpet.
And next to him, that clarinet player.
There's no air in here.
And it's hot.
Jerry, there's the girl, and she's singing.
Yes, her mouth's open, but the orchestra's so loud I can't hear her. Can you?
No. Oh! Jerry, look at the walls. They're closing in on us. The room's getting smaller and smaller.
But look behind the musicians. There's no wall at all. Only black space.
We better get out of here.
Oh, no. Can't get out now.
Oh, the clarinet player. But how can you be talking to us here? Your clarinet's still playing.
My clarinet plays by itself.
Huh?
I told you not to come in here, didn't I? Now you're gonna die.
Jerry!
You're gonna die by the knife in my hand.
Jerry, where are you? Help me!
He's gone. Now listen to that trumpet. Listen to him climb. Okay, boys? One, two. When he hits high C, this knife goes right into you.
Oh, no. Jerry! Jerry,
Listen to the trumpet. G sharp. A. B flat. And look at this knife, and here comes high C.
Jerry!
Pam! Pam, darling, what's the matter?
Help me! The knife! High C! Don't, Lynn!
I'm right here, sweetheart. Wake up!
Wake up! Huh? Oh, I was asleep.
Sure.
Oh, darling, what a horrible dream.
It must have been. You were waving your arms and kicking your legs. But you're safe in the car, and we can start driving home again.
Oh. You know, darling, it all started when I dreamed I heard a clarinet playing. And then I saw... Jerry, am I awake?
We both are. And I hear it, too. Somebody's playing a clarinet somewhere near us on the road.
Yes, Pam and Jerry are awake now, but it's still pretty dreamlike to hear a clarinet in the country on a dark, dark road.
Hello, everybody, hello. Halo is the shampoo that glorifies your hair, so halo, everybody, halo.
Use Halo shampoo if you want naturally bright and beautiful hair. Remember, even finest soaps and soap shampoos hide the natural luster of your hair with dulling soap film. But Halo contains no soap, therefore cannot leave dulling soap film. The first time you use Halo, your hair glistens in all its natural brilliance. The natural color and luster shine through like sunshine through a clean window pane. And remember, even in hardest water, Halo makes oceans of rich, fragrant lather. Halo quickly carries away loose dandruff and grease, needs no lemon or vinegar rinse, because Halo leaves no dulling soap film, nothing to hide your hair's natural beauty. Say hello to Halo and goodbye to dulling soap film. Use Halo on your children's hair, too. Get Halo shampoo at any cosmetic counter. Remember, Halo glorifies your hair.
So Halo, everybody, Halo. Halo shampoo, Halo.
Now, back to Mr. and Mrs. North.
We've got to see what it is.
I know what it is, Dolly. A clarinet being played on a dark road on a dark night. The point is, why?
It's coming from behind those trees.
We'll see in a minute.
Now it's going away, Jerry. Yeah. Maybe drawing us after it like the Pied Piper of Hamelin. I'm right. Look at that car against the tree.
Pretty badly smashed. Someone may be hurt.
Maybe it's a girl. She isn't there now.
What makes you say that?
That's the way it was in my dream. Is there?
Yes, there's a girl.
She's there? Oh, but she's not dead, is she?
She's alive, Pam.
Oh, somehow I knew she would be.
Loopy, you got to take me back. You've got to, Loopy, or I'll... Oh, who are you?
We found you here in the wrecked car, miss. Are you badly hurt?
No, I just hit my head, I guess.
Here, let me help you out.
Thanks. Where's Loopy?
The man who was playing the clarinet. We heard him, but we haven't seen him.
Good. You got a car? Could you take me back into the city with you?
We'll be glad to. And you ought to see a doctor. How'd the crash happen?
Loopy tried to get me to run away with him, and when I caught on, he wouldn't turn back. I crashed the car on purpose. Loopy's the greatest hot clarinet in this world or out of it. Oh. I'm Mona Tremont.
I guess we ought to know who you are, but...
I'm a hot singer. They call me the Scat Girl. I guess you don't get around.
No. But shouldn't we try to find Loopy?
I don't want to find him. I don't want to get back to the city.
Hey, wait a second.
Here's another car.
It's Eddie. Eddie, darling.
Morning, baby. You okay?
Eddie, I'm so glad you got here. Now you can take me back into town.
You bet, honey. And I want to get my hands on Loopy.
Loopy doesn't seem to be around here anymore.
Excuse me, folks. This is Eddie Rayburn, a hot trumpet if there ever was one.
We're Mr. and Mrs. North.
Hi.
And as you're in good hands, Mr. Mont, we'll be getting back to our car.
Wait a minute.
What?
Eddie.
Huh?
Something's been stolen from my handbag.
You know what it is?
You bet. And so do you.
Oh, maybe that was Loopy's doing. That guy must be around here someplace.
Jerry, our car's starting.
Hey, wait!
That's Loopy thinking. Got a gun, Mr. Doll.
Look out!
How do you like that?
Oh, Eddie, you know where he's going, don't you?
Yeah. But how do you know I know?
I wish I didn't. Won't you take us with you in your car?
Okay, hop in. Okay, cats, there's your crate parked just ahead.
I never expected that. Jerry, we've got the car back.
I hope it's all in one piece. Anyway, thanks very much for the lift, Eddie. And Mona, I hope you're okay.
I will be. So long, folks, and thanks.
Oh, just a minute. I want to see that Loopy McGee and give him a piece of my mind for stealing our car.
Now, look, Mrs. North, you're not going to see Loopy. I'm giving a private party. And you're not coming into that building with us or you'll get hurt. Permanently.
Oh.
Now, take your car and get going. So long.
Nice people.
We better go, Pam. It's late and there's our car.
Jerry, I'm remembering that awful dream and it's all coming true, this strange building. This is where Eddie brought us before.
Oh, darling, forget it. Dreams never come true.
I know, but something tells me we're not going to leave here.
No, just watch us. Get in, dear. I'll get in the other side.
Right. Jerry, look at this here on the seat.
Never mind, dear. Never mind. Get in.
But Jerry, it's a wanted circular for an escaped convict.
Huh? Wanted, Eddie Malden escaped 6 weeks ago from state penitentiary while serving 3-year term for armed robbery. Dangerous. Former occupation, trumpet player.
Look at the picture. That's Eddie. Yeah. The man who drove us into town. The man who just took the girl into that building.
And this must be the thing Mona missed from her handbag. Loopy stole it from her.
And they were both scared because Loopy found out he's a fugitive.
That's right, Mr. North. Oh. Now I'll take it from you.
Oh. Eddie, well, we thought you were inside.
Give me that thing. Here you are. Well, so long, Eddie. Hold it. Now that you know who I am, you think I'm going to let you run off and call the police? Not a chance. Come on inside.
Oh, dear. What are you going to do with us?
Keep you locked up in the cellar while I finish some unfinished business? Opening.
Don't make any noise, Jerry.
Not if I can help it. One more push. Okay, we're out.
Oh.
Gosh, it's dark.
Jerry, it's exactly like it.
Like what?
Like the way it was in my dream. I wonder where that door is. Oh, I remember now. We just turned a corner and there...
Wait a minute.
Oh!
Don't move.
Who's that?
I don't know. Just a man I bumped into in the dark.
Won't be dark long. There's a light right here. There. Oh, there's two of you characters. Just what do you got in mind sneaking around here? Talk faster, you'll get in trouble.
Let's begin by finding out who you are.
Flash Farrell, Mona Tremont's manager and future husband. And there's a private jam session going on and you haven't been invited. Now you take a course.
Jam session? Then there is a jam session.
Yeah. What do you want with it?
We've got to get in there to prevent
him.
Mr. Farrell, I want you to hear me sing.
You sing, do you?
Oh, haven't you heard of me? I'm Pam, Choo Choo North. Choo Choo. That's my style.
Okay, Choo Choo. And who's this guy?
Look, Mr. Farrell.
That's my husband, Hot Lips North. Do you ever hear him play on the zither?
Zither? Who can play hot on a zither?
Oh, you never heard Hot Lips. Has he Hot Lips?
No, he never has.
It all sounds fishy to me.
Okay, then. Just show us where the jam session is.
Okay, Choo-Choo. And the first thing we'll do is to hear you sing. And you better be good.
Bongo, 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 I don't want to leave the Congo, so I think I'll stay where I am. Choo-choo, civilization, I'll stay right here. Choo-choo!
Okay, Choo-choo, you're not so bad. She's okay, isn't she, boy? Not bad.
I'm so glad you liked it, Mr. Farrell. Jerry, the way it was before, Loopy had a knife. See if he has one now.
All right, I'll be right back.
Hey, North.
Yeah?
Who let you out, Farrell?
No, no. We let ourselves out and met him in the corridor.
Now, look, North. Anybody that crosses me up gets it, including Flash Farrell. I'll kill anybody that gets between me and Mona.
Farrell's in love with her, too, isn't he?
Look at her, boy. Wouldn't you be?
I've got a very charming wife, thank you.
Say, hot lips. Hot lips.
Oh. Yes, Farrell?
Sorry, we haven't got a zipper for you.
Oh, that's all right, Farrell.
Oh, how did you think I was, hot lips?
Just great. Choo-choo.
Eddie, how about giving us a number?
Oh, sure, Loopy, but I'll have to make it the last for tonight.
Okay, Eddie, but come on. Come on, Flash.
Yeah, sure. I'll see you later, Choo-choo. Come on.
Jerry, it's more and more like my dream. You've got to stop Eddie from playing.
Okay, I'll try.
Hiya, folks. Say, I didn't know you two were hep.
Hep? To what?
To the rhythm. I didn't know you had the power.
Now, look, Mona, I've got to get over to the bandstand.
No, you don't. There's a gun in this handbag of mine. Make like you're just chatting so nobody gets leery.
What's the matter?
I saw Eddie talking to you. What'd he tell you?
He said he'd kill anybody that came between you and him. That means Loopy, because he knows about Eddie.
Does Farrell know about Eddie, too?
No, he doesn't. What are you two going to do?
We don't know.
I'll tell you what to do. Nothing. Just you two keep your trap shut, or you'll have bad trouble with me.
We can't let him commit murder.
Oh, no.
Hey, folks, shut up, will you? Eddie's going to rip out with a little lip. All set, Eddie? Take an eye.
It's going right out the roof. Okay? One, two.
Jerry.
Yes, darling.
The dream, the dream.
What?
The trumpet was playing, and Loopy started to come at me with a knife. The trumpet went higher and higher, like he's doing now.
Pam, you're imagining things. Nothing can happen now that he's playing.
A flat. A. B flat. It's getting closer. Jerry, do something. Eddie. I told you, Jerry.
What's the matter with him?
Here, let me see.
Jerry, is he...
Yes. Eddie Malden is dead.
It's a bad spot for Pam and Jerry, for they know the murderer is right in that cellar room with them. Last word on cleaning teeth is your dentist.
Yes, the last word on cleaning teeth is your dentist.
And over 4,000 dentists in a nationwide survey said Colgate tooth powder with the 2-minute routine gets teeth sparkling and super clean.
Yes, dentists say Colgate tooth powder with the 2-minute routine gets teeth sparkling and super clean.
So to get your teeth sparkling and super clean, to show their full natural sparkle, start today with Colgate tooth powder and this 2-minute routine.
One.
Brush your teeth night and morning for 2 minutes with Colgate tooth powder.
Two.
Be sure to brush all three surfaces of your teeth, the biting edge, the inside, and the outside.
Three.
And always stroke your brush away from the gums.
Remember, dentists nationwide approve Colgate tooth powder with the 2-minute routine. Remember, too, Colgate tooth powder also freshens and sweetens your breath.
The last word on cleaning teeth is your dentist.
And dentists say Colgate tooth powder with the 2-minute routine gets teeth sparkling and super clean.
It looks like he's been poisoned.
Eddie, my Eddie. Okay, which one of you did it? I've got a gun in this bag that's ready for him.
Mona, wait. You'll only get yourself in trouble.
Listen to what the guy says, Mona.
Unless you don't care if you shoot, Mona.
I care, all right. I want to get the guy that did it.
Mona, you're awful sure it was one of us.
That's what I was thinking, Mr. Farrell. Mona, you were certainly anxious before to keep us away from Eddie.
You're onto it, Pam. How about it, Mona?
If anybody tries to hang Eddie's murder on me, they'll go right along with him. I loved him.
Well, Mona, don't point that gimmick at me.
Listen to reason, Mona.
I'm listening. Somebody talk.
Pam, I've got an idea.
No tricks now, Mr. North.
What is it, Jerry?
Eddie told me he was going to kill Loopy because Loopy knew he was a convict. And we all know Loopy was in love with Mona.
You mean I kill him? You're offbeat, mister.
Not much. You killed him to get a free hand with Mona.
Okay, Loopy. This looks like the last chorus for you.
Jerry, wait. That doesn't make sense.
Now you're in the groove, Mrs. Nord.
Oh, but it does make sense. Good sense. Sure, Loopy killed him. He hated Eddie.
Don't you move, Farrell. Don't any of you forget this gun.
I'm not forgetting it. But you listen, Mona. You yourself told us that Farrell didn't know that Eddie was an escaped convict.
That's right.
What are you getting at, Pam?
Well, Loopy didn't have to murder Eddie to get him out of the way. He knew Eddie was an escaped convict, and so all he had to do was report him to the police. But Flash, you didn't know that. And so to get Mona away from him, you thought you had to kill him.
That's a lie.
Farrell, you're going after Eddie.
Don't shoot Mona. Grab him, Loopy. I got him. Me too.
Nice going, Mrs. Nora. You sure got the power.
Oh, just call me Choo-Choo. Jerry, what a night. Now it's almost dawn.
We'll be home in a moment, darling. And then some sleep.
I could go to sleep right now. Jerry, listen.
It's that clarinet again.
Where's it coming from? Am I dreaming?
And so once again, the Early Risers Club greets you with music to put you in tune for the day.
Oh, a disc jockey on the car radio.
And we start as usual with our theme, a recording by Loopy McGee and his clarinet.
Want to hear it, dear?
I do not. Take me home and let me sleep and never dream again.
Night at the same time, the Colgate-Palmolive Peat Company, makers of Halo Shampoo and Colgate Tooth Powder, brings you Mr. and Mrs. North, starring Alice Frost and Joseph Curtin. The characters are based on those originally created by Francis and Richard Lockridge. Original music is composed and conducted by Charles Paul. The program is produced and directed by John Lovton.
There's a fragrance that men love, so delightful and gay. Caressing the skin you bathe with cashmere bouquet. You're enchanting and trancing with a subtle perfume that whispers of romance in a candlelit room. And it's thrilling to bathe each day with cashmere bouquet. No other soap gives your skin this exciting bouquet.
Be sure you join us again next Tuesday when the Norths are pigeonholed by a pigeon, chased by a pair of lovebirds on the wing, and caught by a murderer who has flown the coop. This is Charles Stark speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Standard of California, on behalf of independent Chevron gas stations and Standard stations throughout the West, invites you to Let George Do It. Another adventure of George Valentine.
Personal notice, danger is my stock and trade. If it's too hot for you to handle and you need confidential help, you got a job for me, George Valentine. Write full details.
Dear Mr. Valentine, last night I told a stupid, needless lie. I didn't think it mattered to anyone but me. And yet because of it, an innocent man has been arrested today. Tell the truth, you say? And if I do, I'll lose my wife, lose my job, end up in jail. There's got to be a way out.
Will you see me at my office as soon as you get this letter? I'm editor of the News and Review magazine, and it's signed Arnold Loomis.
Mr. Loomis certainly must have told a whopper, Brooksy.
Oh, men will tell lies and women will shed tears. 'Twas ever thus.
Okay, Sarah Bernhardt.
I'm quoting Ma Perkins.
Well, if this gentleman can tell such fabulous fibs, Angel, this whole letter could be the result of an overactive imagination.
Yes, I know, dear. But since you have an overactive curiosity, shall we get started?
Well, Mr. Loomis?
Mr. Valentine, I like to gamble. It's the only thing that stood between my wife and me for years. I thought I had it licked.
Yeah?
Well, the day before yesterday, I left the office early and drew $1,000 from the bank.
Uh-huh.
10 crisp $100 bills, practically all of our savings.
To gamble with?
Oh, no, Miss Brooks. Martha and I were going on our second honeymoon. We planned it for a long time.
Oh.
But, well, you can guess what happened.
Oh, yeah, I know. The best intentions. What was it, a poker game or a bookie?
The racetrack.
I see. And the bank tails made off with your $1,000.
Naturally, I'd have to explain it to Martha, and she'd never forgive me. She'd leave me. Well, then I had what I thought was a brilliant idea. I went to the police.
The police? Can they arrest horses for not coming in first?
Hey, Brooks, I made up a story. I told them I was driving along Randall Boulevard. A man asked me for a lift, and when he got in, he stuck a gun in my ribs and took the money.
Oh, hey, playing games like that with the police doesn't come under the head of innocent merriment. Go on, Mr. Lomas.
Well, they questioned me. Well, I had to give them some sort of description of the man. I made it as vague as possible. 5'10", dark complexion, medium build, age mid-30s, a grayish suit, you know.
But your letter, Mr. Loomis. Don't tell me they found your mythical man.
Yes. Yes, I had to go down to headquarters yesterday morning to identify him.
Hold it, my friend. Hold it. Fun is fun. What do you mean you identified him?
I had no choice. The man confessed to holding me up.
Huh?
He identified me, yes. Not only that, they found 10 $100 bills in his pocket. I tell you, Mr. Valentine, it's...
Yeah, I know. Absurd, incredible, etc.
And was this man dark complexion, medium build, mid-30s, etc.?
Yes, yes, everything. Everything fitted. Well, I couldn't tell the police. I just dreamt up the whole thing, and of course, there's still Martha.
What do you want me to do, Loomis?
I've got a conscience, man. I can't let this Neil Denquist, or whatever his name is, take the blame for a crime that never happened. There must be some mistake. But what?
Was there any mention in the papers about your so-called holdup?
Yes, yes, a small paragraph on the back pages.
What are you driving at, George?
Well, no man in his right mind takes a rap for something he didn't do.
What makes me feel even worse? The police gave me back my $1,000. I mean the $1,000 that I...
This Denquist guy isn't crazy. He must have some very interesting reasons for playing the fall guy.
I don't know what to think, Valentine, but you've got to find out what it's all about.
Okay. Okay, I'll string along with you and try to keep this from your wife. Can you prove you were out at the racetrack and lost all that money?
Why, no. I'm sure there was nobody there to recognize me.
Well, how about the tickets you bought on the horses?
No, I tore them all up.
Loomis, give Miss Brooks one of your pictures. Maybe one of the ticket sellers at the racetrack may remember you.
Yes, yes, of course.
Meantime, I'll talk to Neil Denquist and see just why he's so anxious to frame himself.
You're the lawyer they assigned to me?
No, Denquist.
Reporter?
Yeah, that's right, a reporter. It's my job to find out what really happened.
You can get that from the desk, Sergeant.
Oh, I'd rather get it from you.
Well, I just didn't get the breaks. That's why I'm here in this cell. I tried to get rid of the gun in Fairview Park. Some woman saw me and told the cop he picked me up and found the money in my pocket.
Very interesting.
They had my description from that man, Loomis. And that's all there is to it.
This is your first offense, isn't it, Denquist?
Yeah, you know how it is. A guy gets strapped for money, he thinks he can pick it up the easy way. He gets caught. End of story.
Quite a story, too.
Huh? What do you mean?
Oh, nothing. Crime doesn't pay. Honest toil is its own reward. You know, you think of the others. Maybe seeing you again, Denquist. In fact, I'm sure of it. Well, Brooksy, what'd you find out at the track?
Well, not a thing, George. Arnold Loomis didn't leave an impression with any of the ticket sellers.
I see. Well, I didn't get anything out of Denquist.
You mean he doesn't mind sitting in jail for something he didn't do?
Oh, no, he's very philosophical about the whole thing. Now, listen, Angel.
Yeah?
I didn't tell Denquist what Loomis told us, that he was never robbed.
Well, wouldn't that have helped to get to the bottom of all this?
Yeah, it might have. But I think there's a better way to go about it. And that brings us to you.
Me?
Yeah, you. There's a Mrs. Denquist, Francine Denquist. I looked it up. Now, here's the address.
So?
Well, if Francine cares anything about her husband, she doesn't like the idea of his languishing in jail. Now, if you talk to her, woman to woman, and tell her there was no robbery for Denquist to commit, we might get more out of her than we could possibly get out of him.
And how am I supposed to know about Loomis?
Well, tell her the truth. You're working with me. See, I'm sure Denquist is innocent, and I'm going to prove it. Okay, that's the story, Brooksy.
Right, George.
So, fancy it up a little, Angel, and see what we get.
Miss Brooks, I don't know why this man Loomis told you what he did.
But doesn't it make you happy, Mrs. Denchrist?
It might, if I could believe it. But I know what Neil has told me, and he's never lied to me.
Well, there might be the first time, although I can't imagine why.
He stole that money for me. We never more than scraped by with that job he has. I told him again and again I was happy, but he kept saying I deserved better things.
Oh.
Neil told me he wants to take what's coming to him, serve his sentence, get it over with. I want it that way, too. Then we can forget the whole thing and start all over again.
Isn't there anything I can say to convince you?
I love Neil enough to stand by him and wait. Then we can build some kind of real happiness together.
But
enough has been said about what he did. The best thing you and Mr. Valentine can do is leave us alone.
Mrs. Denquist, why would Mr. Loomis make up such a weird story, insist your husband couldn't have robbed him?
Why would Neil take the blame for something he didn't do and part with $1,000 we haven't even got?
Oh, I know, but...
There's nothing more to say, Miss Brooks.
Lieutenant Riley, I admit Mr. Loomis did a very foolish thing when he handed in that false report of a robbery, but can't
you see... Foolish thing? Oh, Valentine, you mustn't be harsh on your client.
Huh?
Just a little prank, that's all. We love to send out alarms.
Oh. It's lucky for you and Loomis it wasn't a prank, and that we found the man who robbed him.
Well, frankly, I'm confused, George. Both Denquist and Mrs. Denquist are satisfied with the way things are.
Look, Lieutenant, I told you the only way I can make any sense out
Let's
of it is
not
that...
Let's not go into that again, please. Of all the crazy... Look, a man reads in the paper about a hold.
That's right.
The description of the culprit might fit him.
Yeah.
So he puts 10 $100 bills in his pocket, gets himself picked up, then confesses all. Now, why? Why?
Because he might want an alibi for something much more serious that took place about the same time.
Ah, stop it, Valentine. Stop it. I ought to have my head examined, but I'm having that information checked for you right now.
Well, maybe it's reaching, Lieutenant, but if George is right, it would explain why Loomis and Denquist are acting as they are.
And it's about the only thing that would.
All right, all right.
Here's the dope you asked for, Lieutenant.
I'll take it, Sergeant. Thanks.
Yes, sir.
Now, Valentine, I hope you'll be satisfied. Loomis was held up on Tuesday night at 7 o'clock.
That's right.
Well, according to this report here, the only crimes of a violent nature that took place in our fair city were...
What's the matter, Lieutenant?
Of course. I should have remembered the Hafey case.
Yeah, what about it?
Young Mrs. Hafey was found murdered in her home on Norton Heights. The medical examiner says it happened around, here it is, 7 o'clock Tuesday night.
Come on, let's hear some more, Lieutenant.
Murder is still at large. Gloria Hafey, 27. Husband's name, John Hafey, broker. Victim previously married to... Here, Valentine, you can have the honor. You've earned it.
Holy Moses, get this book, see? Victim previously married to Neil Denquist.
Back to tonight's adventure of George Valentine. Well, just put yourself in George's place. Your client, Arnold Loomis, tells you he made a great big fib about being robbed. Why? So his wife wouldn't find out he lost $1,000 on the ponies. Then he tells you that a man, one Neil Denquist, has confessed to this crime that never was. You learn that a murder's been committed about the same time of the alleged holdup. So what else would you be talking about now to Lieutenant Riley?
Yeah, Lieutenant, this was an alibi for the books, all right. If the police insist Denquist was committing a felony on Randall Boulevard Tuesday at 7, he couldn't possibly be at Norton Heights committing murder.
Well, all I have to do now is sweat the truth out of Denquist.
Oh, Lieutenant, if you can, go easy with Loomis, will you? So his wife doesn't find out that he lied.
I'll do what I can. Oh, yes. You can tell your client that he owes Denquist $1,000.
Yeah, that's right, isn't it?
And I have an idea Denquist is going to need it for a lawyer to keep him out of the gas chamber.
Okay, Lieutenant. I'll pass that on to Loomis right now.
Oh, it's you, Valentine. Come in.
What is this?
What happened to you, Mr. Loomis?
That bandage. You look like the boy with the fife and the spirit of 76.
I feel older than that.
Oh, don't tell me your wife found out what you did with that money.
No, Martha's been out all evening, thank heaven.
Come on, let's get to the point, Loomis. Who went to work on your head?
I don't know.
What?
I was in the living room reading. I heard the front door open and took it for granted it was Martha.
Yeah.
Then when I didn't hear anything for a few minutes, I went out into the hall to see. And the next thing I knew, I was getting up off the floor.
Anything missing?
No, that's the strange part of it. Not a thing. I went over the whole apartment. I don't understand it.
Yeah. Something else that defies all reason, eh, Loomis? It seems you're allergic to that sort of thing.
Well, George, don't you think you ought to tell Mr. Loomis about Danquist?
Huh? Well, what about him? Did you prove that he couldn't have possibly held me up?
More or less. I'll be able to tell you more tomorrow. Now, think hard, Loomis. You know of anybody who'd want to conk you on the head just for the sheer joy of it?
I know. No, not a soul, Valentine. I don't have an enemy in the world.
Ah. Well, maybe it was a dear friend. Anyway, I'll call you later.
When the guy gambles as heavily as Loomis did, there might be a lot of people who'd want to give him a good going over. And maybe one of them did tonight.
Sorry, Lieutenant, I can't throw it away like that.
I think George is right. Somehow it ties up with this whole case.
Case? Yeah, this thing is turning out to be a Chinese puzzle. My boys have been taking turns talking to Dentless, but he just sits there and sticks to his story.
Hey, wait a minute. Come to think of it, Lieutenant. Very little has been said about Gloria Hafey's present husband.
Well, you can rest easy about John Hafey. He was nuts about his wife. He's a respectable broker, and he has an alibi for Tuesday evening.
And what kind of an alibi?
Well, he was in several hotel bars before going home to dinner. There are a lot of people to prove it to.
Oh. You happen to have any pictures of the late Mrs. Hafey?
Well, just these. The one the boys took at the scene of the crime.
Must have been beautiful.
Yeah, and took care of herself. Looks like she'd just come back from the beauty parlor when she was killed. Hadn't even combed out her hair yet.
Well, I won't take up any more of your time, Lieutenant.
Miss Denquist here to see you, Lieutenant.
Good, good. I want to see her, too. Tell her to come in.
Yes, sir. Go right in, Mr. Thanks.
Lieutenant Riley, you're trying to frame my husband for Gloria Hafey's murder, aren't you?
We're trying to get the truth out of him, Mrs. Denquist.
No, you aren't. Why did this woman here come to my house and try to make me say that Neil was lying about that holdup?
This woman here happens to be my assistant, Mrs. Denquist. My name is Valentine.
And I didn't try to make you say anything. We were just trying to prove your husband's innocence.
Yes, so the police could get him on a murder charge.
Just a minute. How did you know we connected your husband with the Hafey case at all?
You think I'm that stupid? I read about Gloria's murder in the papers. I knew you'd finally get around to Neil.
Oh, yeah.
You were bound to find out he hated her. When he was married to that Gloria. He had a good job. He was doing well. She bled him, spent every cent he made. When she divorced him, he had no spirit left, nothing.
You know you're only building the motive for murder, don't you?
You'd find out all those things anyway. But Neil is innocent. Lieutenant Riley, he was just where he said he was Tuesday night, and here's the proof.
Huh? Money. To Arnold from Martha.
Arnold Loomis. Martha's his wife's name.
Where did you get this, Mrs. Denquist?
Home, in Neil's bureau drawer. He took it when he stole that money.
Are you sure you didn't get this somewhere else and after going to a great deal of trouble?
I don't know what you mean.
Valentine, I'm beginning to feel like a weather vane. This money clip seems to support Denquist's story and call your client a screwball or worse.
Yeah, well, I'm sticking with Loomis, Lieutenant. And it's going to take a lot to stop me from proving that Denquist is lying in his teeth. Oh, yeah.
I was wondering when you'd get back. I'm John Hafey.
Oh, yeah. I've been thinking a lot about you. Come on, let's go in the office.
Yes.
Grab a chair, Mr. Hafey. Oh,
thank you.
This is my assistant, Miss Brooks.
How do you do?
How do you do, Miss Brooks? May I get right to the point?
I wish you would.
I had a talk with Lieutenant Riley. I know you're working on the Denquist case.
Right.
I also know your sentiments, and they're mine, exactly.
What do you mean?
Well, naturally, I know a great deal about Neil Denquist. I'm as sure as you are that he's lying about holding up that man on Tuesday night.
Yeah? What makes you so sure?
The things Gloria told me about him. He isn't a very stable character. He could never hold a decent job. It was a terrible struggle for Gloria while they were married.
Oh, really?
Finally, when she just couldn't stand it any longer, he... Well...
Go on.
I won't say he threatened her, but he was very bitter.
I see. Well, thanks for the information. It was nice of you to go to all this trouble to tell me.
It's more than that, Valentine. If Denquist is lying about Tuesday, he killed Gloria. I want you to do everything in your power to see if you can break his alibi.
That's what I am doing, Mr. Hayes.
I mean, don't spare the cost and keep at it, no matter how long it takes. I'd like you to consider me a client.
Well, I have no objection to being paid twice for the same job.
You keep in touch with me, then.
Count on that.
You can reach me at my office until 5 o'clock every day.
Talk about your split personality. Gloria, sinner, or saint?
You pays your money and you takes your chance. Hey, what a deal, Brooksy. A guy decided to lie to his wife, and now look at what we've got.
Two clients.
Hello? Yeah, Lieutenant. Hey, wait a minute. Hold it. I want Brooksy to take this down. Hey, Angel.
Yeah, go ahead, George.
Telegram. Phone in from Hafey House. 3:30 p.m. Tuesday. Go ahead, Lieutenant. Neil, be at my house at 7. I'll expect you. I think you know better than to cross me. Signed, Gloria.
George!
Now, what does Denquist have to say about this, Lieutenant? Sticks to his story, huh? Yeah, okay. Call you later. Thanks.
Who dug up the telegram, George?
A girl at Western Union. She read about the case and remembered the wire.
That's real bad for Denquist.
Brooksy, where did you ever get your rare insight?
What?
I mean your uncanny gift of putting your finger on the one thing that lights up the whole situation, brings order out of chaos. Just like pressing a light switch in a dark room.
Oh, stuff like that. Oh, now look, what did I say? What are you talking about?
Before we go into that, Angel, let's see if I'm right.
George, this could be technically called illegal entry.
Now, what's illegal about dropping in at your client's house the back way through the garden? Avery isn't home, no servants around, and I'm in a hurry. Now, wait a minute. Let's try these French doors open.
Well, I wish you'd tell me what my psychic powers told you. You know, you can't tell a girl she's like a light switch in a dark room and then just clam up.
We're in luck.
Hmm.
Come on in. What do you suppose I'm like?
That's me, remember? I'll just say something and behold, there shall be light.
See, I got to find the name of the beauty parlor Mrs. Hafey was in the habit of using.
Oh, I see. You remember what I said when we were looking at that picture in Riley's office.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, it must be in an address book or on the telephone pad.
Yeah.
Can't wait till tomorrow and it can be anywhere in the city.
Valentine, look out! Get down!
You all right, Brooksy?
I guess so.
Stay just where you are. I'll switch the lights back on and see if everything's all right.
Hafey!
Yeah, just a minute.
Hey, what goes, Hafey?
I guess it's okay. Whoever it was, it disappeared.
What happened anyway?
I just came home, Miss Brooks. I saw you two standing here in the center of the room. I was about to say something, then I noticed someone standing in the door to the garden with a gun in her hand.
Her hand?
I think so. It was hardly more than a shadow, but it looked like a woman. The only thing I could think of was to turn off the light and shout.
Well, it's certainly a good thing you did.
Hey, come out here, Hafey. You were right, it was a woman.
Oh?
You can see the heel marks here on the ground.
Francine Denquist. She's the only one it could be.
It's fantastic that she should go this far to keep you from smashing her husband's alibi.
She's a desperate woman, Hafey, and she's in love. Well, it's lucky you came along. We owe you our lives.
Don't you think we ought to call Lieutenant Riley?
No, I've got a better idea.
What's that, George?
Hafey, I wonder if you'd drive Miss Brooks down to headquarters and wait there for me.
Of course.
Oh, yeah, and ask Lieutenant Riley to pick up Loomis and Mrs. Denquist.
What have you got in mind?
I just have to make one stop, then I'll join you. Mr. Hafey, I think I can clean this thing up for you tonight.
Oh, Sergeant!
Yes, Lieutenant.
Tell Loomis and Hafey to keep their shirts on. I'll get around to them in a little while.
Yes, sir.
And as soon as Valentine arrives, get him right in here.
Right.
Mrs. Denquist, it's no use trying to keep anything from the lieutenant.
Miss Brooks is right. We'll check and find out where you were every minute this evening.
I did everything I could. I guess it's over now. It was a horrible thing to do, but I did try to kill Mr. Valentine.
Because he was bent on proving your husband's alibi was a phony?
Was it, Mrs. Denquist?
Yes. Yes. From beginning to end. Neil got Gloria's telegram at the store where he works. He didn't know what to think, but he knew what kind of a woman she was.
Mm-hmm. Go on.
He went out to Norton Heights. When he got there, she was already dead.
Well, why didn't he just call the police?
It sounds very simple, Miss Brooks. But if he were found there, he'd be the first one to be suspected. Luckily, no one saw Neil, so we came home, and the next morning, together, we thought of a wonderful, foolproof scheme.
The Loomis business.
We read about Mr. Loomis being held up. The description could fit Neil, and, you know, the rest. Funny. One time in a million, a man would lie about being robbed. He would be the one we picked on. Had it been a real robbery, no one would have denied Neil the honor of being the criminal.
Well, we've got that straightened out. But the question of whether your husband killed Gloria Hafey is something for the DA's office and the jury to decide.
May I see Neil a minute? I know he needs me.
Yeah, sure. But I'm not forgetting the attempted murder charge against you and the little matter of assault and battery on Mr. Loomis to get that money clip.
Sergeant!
Yes, sir.
Take Mrs. Denquist down and let her talk to her husband.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
And tell Mr. Hafey to come in. He might as well know what happened.
Yes, sir.
Now, Miss Brooks.
I know. Where's George?
When he disappears like this, I tell you, just... Oh, Mr. Hafey, come in.
Yes, Dennis.
I think we've scotched Mr. Dentworth's alibi, but whether he's guilty or not remains to be seen.
I see. I guess I'm too tired at this point to have any reaction to that.
Oh, I'm sorry to be so long, Lieutenant.
Oh, what gives, George?
Well, I just had a very interesting conversation with Michelle, Mrs. Hafey's hairdresser.
Well, how nice.
Yeah, Michelle was doing her hair from 2 to 4 last Tuesday. You remember, Lieutenant. Brooksy remarked that Mrs. Hafey must have just come from the hairdresser.
Say, wait a minute. Did you say from 2 to 4?
That's right.
But that telegram was phoned in from the Hafey house at 3:30 in San Gloria.
Which means she didn't send the telegram, Lieutenant.
What?
It was sent by someone else who belonged in that house. Someone who wanted Denquist to be found there with the body.
What, George?
What? What could that mean, Mr. Valentine?
Who?
Well, this is a shabby way to repay someone who saved my life, but it was you, Hafey, who sent that telegram. You killed your wife. How many twists can one case take, Brooksy?
Well, I stopped counting the ones this one had.
Mrs. Denquist, innocent as country butter, takes a pot shot at me. Hafey, guilty as sin, saves me because we happen to be working in the same direction.
Yeah, well, is he still sticking to his alibi?
No, that went over the side, Angel. He made a round of the bars, all right, but he had time between stops for a little homicide. Gloria was giving him the works, just as she did Neil Denquist, but on a much bigger scale.
Oh, hello, Mr. Loomis.
Hello, Miss Brooks. I'm in a hurry, but I want you to do yourself a favor.
Well, Mr. Loomis?
Now, put this money I owe you on fair weather in the 5th at Corona Park and put it on the nose.
Ah. Oh, Mr. Loomis, I'm disappointed in you. I thought you'd reform.
But I have, Miss Brooks, thanks to you and Mr. Valentine. I only give tips now. I don't take them.
Next week, when you tune our way for another adventure of George Valentine, you'll hear...
Couldn't wait till you got here, Valentine.
Oh, it's so good to see you, George. I was so afraid that gorilla saw me slip you that note.
What about Bigelow, Lieutenant?
Well, this is just how we found the place. Empty. I put out a general alarm for Bigelow.
Hey, what was in that note about Collins, Brooksy?
Well, it's too late now. Collins is dead.
Not just dead, either, Valentine. Collins was murdered. That means we're not looking for just a stack of paper. We're after a murderer.
Tonight's adventure of George Valentine has been brought to you by Standard of California on behalf of independent Chevron gas stations and Standard stations throughout the West. Let George Do It stars Robert Bailey as George with Francis Robinson as Claire. Wally Meir appears as Lieutenant Riley. Tonight's story was written by David Victor and Herbert Little Jr. and directed by Jaime Del Valle. Also heard in the cast were John Daner as Arnold Loomis, Bill Conrad as Neil Denquist, Georgia Ellis as Francine Denquist, and Herbert Butterfield as John Hafey. The music is composed and conducted by Eddie Dunstetter. Your announcer, John Heaston. Listen again next week, same time, same station, to Let George Do It. This is the Mutual Don Lee Broadcasting System.
You'll see the girls in their bikinis, as cute as ever, but they never get them wet.
The scene has been...
You knew the job was dangerous when you took it.
Radio production.